its current state on 90.5 WKAR. For several decades, the Chinese government forbade researchers from putting radio collars on panda bears. Pandas, with their distinctive markings and decidedly cuddly appearance, are an international symbol for conservation. Now, a team of MSU researchers are among the first to be allowed to use GPS to track wild pandas in China. And they found out some surprising things about these elusive creatures. Current State's April Van Buren sat down with Vanessa Hull, a research associate at the Center for Systems Integration and Sustainability at Michigan State University, to talk about some of those findings. Vanessa told her that
pandas are known for being very secretive, so they live in these mysterious mountain ranges in China, and their habitat is very remote. It's very steep. It's difficult to get to. It's also, the vegetation is very dense, so it's very difficult to see in front of you. And so people who study pandas in the wild sometimes, you know, don't even see a wild panda for several years.
And you guys actually found out some things about pandas that were pretty exciting things that people hadn't really understood or expected before. I'm wondering if you could talk about some of the most surprising things you found.
So pandas are generally known to be solitary, and then during the mating season in the spring, they all sort of come together and congregate so that they can mate. But actually what we found was that in the fall season, we were seeing a large number of interactions between them. They were in the same locations or very similar locations at the same time for over a period of several weeks, which was very surprising to us. And it really made us think harder about thinking about, well, maybe pandas have much more meaningful social interactions than we give them credit for.
Are there any ideas about why pandas would be getting together outside of the mating season?
That's a good question. I think one of the ideas is that there actually could be another mating season in the fall. Another idea is just the fact that they need to maintain the social relationships, and the fact that during the mating season when it comes, they have to be aware of the different pandas in their surroundings and the different pandas that they might want to mate with.
I'm wondering if you could describe for us, obviously pandas are kind of secretive, so we don't know a lot about their day-to-day lives, but of what we know, what is a typical day in the life of a panda?
I think for pandas, the main thing is that they eat. They're constantly eating. So their digestive systems are sort of unique in that they're partially adapted to eat bamboo, which is their main food source. But in other ways, their digestive systems are more adapted for a carnivorous or a meat type of diet. They don't have very long digestive tracts, so the plant matter just kind of moves through their body and they digest less than 20% of what they're eating. So because of that, they have to constantly be eating to get enough nutrients to sustain themselves. So they eat about 14 hours a day, and when they're not eating, they're sleeping mostly.
So kind of living the life.
Yeah, pretty much, yep. Yeah, as long as they have bamboo, they're generally pretty happy.
How much bamboo would an adult panda eat on a daily basis?
Anywhere between 10 to 35 pounds a day.
And pandas have become the symbol for wildlife conservation. Mm-hmm. The panda is sort of the iconic image for the World Wildlife Federation. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the story of conservation of pandas.
Pandas are a great icon for conservation because a lot of what they've gone through in recent history mirrors what's going on with species all over the world. And pandas are a very charismatic image, so it gets people's attention and gets people listening to what's happening. So really with pandas, what we've seen, as many other species, you know, the human population has been increasing so much over the last several hundred years. And then human activities have been increasing and becoming more intensive as we're building these urbanized and globalized societies. And so that's true of China, one of the fastest growing economies in the world right now. Because of the Chinese population growth and all the activities that go along with that, the panda's habitat has shrunk considerably. So they used to be found all throughout China, and now they're found in these very small, fragmented pockets in the southwestern region of China. Another thing, of course, that happened, especially in the 1970s and 1980s, is there was a lot of poaching going on for panda fur. But luckily, you know, the Chinese government has really responded and stepped up. And for them, the panda is a national treasure and almost a symbol of their country in a lot of ways. So they've really invested a lot of money and efforts into conservation. So they stepped up the anti-poaching laws at that time. And so now poaching is much better. It's much less of an issue than it was at that time. And then they've also invested in other conservation policies to protect the habitat. So they've stepped up the number of protected areas and also banned timber harvesting or cutting down forests in a lot of areas of panda habitat. So there are so many things that are very encouraging based on just the investment of the Chinese government in this cause. But of course, there's so many areas that we want to improve on in the future. And because of the population continues to grow, the human population anyway, we really need to continue to invest and continue to be vigilant about helping the species.
We're talking about new research from MSU on the secret lives of Chinese pandas with Center for Systems Integration and Sustainability researcher Vanessa Hull. Vanessa, how did you first become interested in researching pandas?
So I've always been interested in pandas since I was very young. I was probably 6 years old, and for my birthday, I got a panda stuffed animal, and I was just so enamored with this animal, and over time became more and more interested in reading about them and learning where they're from and what they're about. So as I got older, it just became a huge passion of mine, and you know, I went to college, and I decided I wanted to pursue this, so I majored in animal behavior, and I minored in Chinese with the hope of being able to go over there and learn more about pandas and also be able to contribute to the cause of conservation.
You mentioned earlier that China's policies have made a big difference in the population of the panda, mm-hmm. especially policies related to poaching you mentioned. They've obviously made a lot of gains under some of these policy mm-hmm. changes, but are there any new threats or kind of new challenges that are facing the panda population today mm-hmm. that maybe, you know, weren't as big a deal in the 70s but are kind of an emerging mm-hmm. threat?
Right. There's always new threats that are coming up that we need to continue to address. One of the big ones that's on my mind has been livestock raising. So local people living around in panda habitat, you know, obviously have to make a living and support their families. And one of the ways they've done that is by rearing livestock. And that's something that's been increasing, especially since timber harvesting was banned. But in some areas, we're finding that it's being conducted in non-sustainable ways where the livestock are going into panda habitat in the forest and actually eating bamboo and causing disturbance to pandas. And also, you know, climate change is another big question mark. And going into the future, we don't know if global warming continues to increase. That's probably going to affect the bamboo populations in these forests because bamboo is so sensitive to temperature and precipitation. So that could change the distribution of bamboo. And that could happen in a way that could harm pandas because pandas are so dependent on bamboo. If they don't have bamboo, they don't have a chance.
How closed off are panda habitats in China? How closed off are they to human activity? Is it sort of like a national forest preserve like we have here where, you know, certain activities are limited? What can you do in a panda habitat and what's limited there?
So in China, it's a little bit different from what we might understand here as far as like a national park, where national reserves or nature reserves in China, people live inside of them. So these people were there before the area was established as a nature reserve. And a lot of the areas, ethically, you can't just kick out the people. Wolong Nature Reserve, where we did our research, there's almost 5,000 people that live inside the reserve. And so that really becomes a challenge as far as co-managing the people's needs to support their livelihoods and support their families with all of these panda conservation goals that you have and you want to meet. And so, you know, some of our research was looking at how do you co-manage these two? And the biggest thing I think is really to just pay them, to recognize that they have needs that you have to account for and compensate. And so if you're asking them not to do something, if you're asking them not to graze livestock or not to do this activity or that activity, you need to figure out, okay, where are they going to make up that in their livelihood? And how can we maybe provide them a subsidy so that they can still make a living?
We've been talking about the hidden lives of pandas that have been recently revealed by some new MSU research. My guest today has been Vanessa Hull. She's a research associate at MSU's Center for Systems Integration and Sustainability. Thank you so much for coming in, Vanessa.
Thank you so much.